Hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast and the pendulum. And firstly, I want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. We're only a few days away when I release this episode. I did hope that I could cram in a Off the Elven Path episode talking about Tarja's solo Christmas album from Spirits and Ghosts, but I guess that'll have to wait until next year or maybe even the year after. We have a lot of songs to get through, so not too disappointed. I'm sure its time will come. I hope you guys are all feeling in the festive spirit. If you're not, I even put some bells in the intro sequence. You know, rewind, go and listen to it. It will make you feel festive. If it doesn't, well, maybe something else will. It's just some bells, I guess. When it came to planning the episodes, I purposely put this one really close to Christmas because I mentioned in the Gethsemane episode, but I actually got Oceanborn for Christmas one year, shortly after I purchased Once and really got into Nightwish. So this whole album has a real wintry vibe for me. And this song in particular, well, maybe more so Walking in the Air, but this one as well really does put me in the Christmas spirit, so I thought it'd be the perfect one to talk about this close to Christmas. And it is action-packed, this episode, so I've got a list of things that we need to get through and talk about. So I'm gonna wish you all a happy Christmas, and let's crack on with it. This is Sleeping Sun. The story of Sleeping Sun begins in the build-up to the 1999 eclipse. It was the first total eclipse visible from Europe since summer 1990, according to my research, and the first that we here in the UK could witness since summer 1927, so quite significant indeed. The song was requested by the band's German record label, Drakkar, to commemorate the eclipse. Drakkar worked with the band up until 2004, releasing a few Drakkar-only items such as Tales from the Elven Path. They also released Oceanborn with a different cover, one which I will share on the Instagram along with this episode, and actually I think I may even prefer it to the original, though perhaps just because I only discovered it existed in the last few years and I only attained a copy of it just a few months ago from a bargain price, bargain seller on eBay, so that was a super cool find. The eventual single of Sleeping Sun was branded Sleeping Sun Four Ballads of the Eclipse, and also released by Drakkar. The package and additional ballads were made up of Swan Heart and Walking in the Air from Oceanborn and Angels Fall First from their debut. I always felt that that last song, Angels Fall First, really deserves more credit, but of course we will talk about that one in another episode. The request for Sleeping Sun from the record label shows just how big of a deal Nightwish were becoming in Germany. It's a territory that is famous for embracing metal music and an early adopter of Nightwish's music. It sold more than 15,000 copies in Germany and only just missed out on the top spot in their homeland of Finland, charting at number 2. For me, this song in particular signifies the start of a phenomenon when Nightwish really began to achieve the success to match their acclaim. Speaking of the Sleeping Sun single in the Once Upon a Nightwish book, Bogdan Kolpech from Drakkar Records recalls, "One of the things I did with Sleeping Sun was advertise it on the German news channel NTV, which is like the German CNN. Nobody had thought of that before, a metal label advertising on a mainstream TV news channel. Even though it was a risk, I still think it was a good idea. It was all about reaching different kinds of people, like, say, fans of Andrea Bocelli. And I think it worked well. We really did reach a wider audience. We also put Sleeping Sun on a bunch of package compilations like Mysteria, Fantasia and so on, big major compilations. I don't know the exact figures, but I'd say Sleeping Sun has sold at least 500,000 on different compilations, maybe even more." So despite the single's success, Thomas stood by his initial reservations of creating a song specifically for the eclipse. I remember when the song was presented to BMG and the German subsidiary of Island Records, Bogdan says. The night was a success in every respect, but as we were taking a ride organised as a part of the event, Thomas leaned over and told me never to ask him for one single song like that ever again. And I never have. I got the message. Many of us think of Sleeping Sun as an Oceanborn track, but that's only half true. The album was initially 10 tracks on its 1998 release, with Sleeping Sun being tacked on as the final 11th track on later editions and releases. Fans like me who revisited their back catalogue upon discovering them a little bit later in their career may go a long time without actually realising that it wasn't on the initial cut, since it doesn't show as a bonus track or the album presented as a reissued version, including Sleeping Sun. So to many, without doing a dig, you wouldn't realise that Oceanborn was anything less than 11 tracks. I have a pet peeve though, and yes, it's probably just me being unreasonable, I will admit, but the album really slogs with the two slowest tracks, Walking in the Air and Sleeping Sun, being put back to back. And for what it's worth, I think Sleeping Sun is the better of the two, but when you're released from that lull of Walking in the Air, I feel like the album should either finish or be injected with a final hit of energy. I have noticed a couple of bands, Norway's Tristania being one of them, that slip in additional or bonus tracks into the album's tracklist wherever they fit best. It works well on Tristania's albums Rubicon and Darkest White. Rather than the songs unsuitably disturbing like the logical conclusion of an album, they contribute to the body of work. And I've thought about this a lot, and I do think that Oceanborn is a slightly different beast, as of course Swanheart sits firmly in the middle of the record as the first ballad, Respite. So wherever we put Sleeping Sun, it feels somewhat too close to that other slowy, but I reckon it could work somewhere between Devil in the Deep Dark Ocean and Passion in the Opera. I know I think too much about track listings, but for me, I just love when an album takes you on a journey, and I feel that where a song is placed genuinely impacts the experience of listening to it. And I do feel that this song actually loses something by just being tacked on to the end. But what do you guys think? Does it impact it for you, or do you not care at all? As far as YouTube versions go, Sleeping Sun is definitely one that gets covered a lot. It's a gentle song that really allows you to zone in on the vocals and to show off that side of your band, or just demonstrate your talent in that area if you're a solo singer. I have a couple of versions that I'd like to draw your eyes and ears to. So firstly, on Instagram, one of the podcast followers, A Tie, gives a nice twist with his deep male voice. His username is Benzi Black. That's Benzii underscore Black. If you want to check out a small taster, it's there on his feed, just a couple of entries down. I also found that Maria Lund released a Finnish language cover version of the song on her album, which roughly translates as Tune of Time, but I'm sure that any Finnish listeners out there can give a more accurate translation if that's not correct. This cover version of Sleeping Sun, as seems to be reflected on that album's cover, is a lot more old school with like a jazzy twist to it, and I can imagine it like soundtracking some smoky bar somewhere in the midst of Finland, and I even get like a James Bond theme, kind of get those vibes from the intro and the verses, which really rely heavily on a sharp dose of strings, with Maria's enchanting and soft voice sitting atop that instrumental. I particularly love the guitar that takes the melody lead before the final chorus, and these bursts of brass throughout. This is definitely an interesting cover version for anyone out there that doesn't mind exploring and listening to other genres. I actually discovered another band via a cover of Sleeping Sun. It's a band called Silent Saga. Their vocalist Sabrina covered it on her YouTube channel, and it had flavours of Tarja's operatic delivery. Yeah, it was certainly very different to that cover from Maria Lund, but I imagine most covers would be. I actually managed to speak with Sabrina about her decision to cover the song and whether Nightwish were an influence for her band Silent Saga and their recent album Rise. And you guys can listen to it right now.
Hi, Simon and the podcast and the pendulum. Sabrina from Silent Saga here. I would like to thank the invitation for this small interview.
No problem at all, Sabrina. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. So as you know, this podcast is all about Nightwish. So I suppose my first question should be about how you discovered the band and are they an inspiration to Silent Saga's music?
I came to know Nightwish upon their Oceanborn release, and it is very hard to tell you which song is the best from this album because a lot of them touches my soul in a very peculiar way. I can say that Nightwish was very inspirational at the time, and listening to Tyra Turunen's unique voice made me realize that to be better, I would have to work a lot. And I mean a lot. But it didn't keep me from doing that. So definitely, they were inspiring.
I can only imagine for a singer how intimidating it must be to hear Tarja, but I'm really glad that she inspired you rather than stopped you from wanting to make music. I mentioned earlier in the podcast that I discovered you and the band from your own cover of Sleeping Sun, which I really enjoyed. Is Sleeping Sun one of your favorite Nightwish songs, or are there some others that you particularly enjoy?
I'm very pleased to hear that the cover of Sleeping Sun is liked. As I told you before, it's very difficult to say which song is good when you have Thomas as a composer. His work is so solid, and as a result, you can't pick one song and say, this is the best. But some of their albums meant a lot to me, like Oceanborn, Century Child, and Once.
Yay! Once, I've mentioned a few times, is actually the album and the era that really got me into Nightwish, so I definitely appreciate what a great album it is. I think I'd struggle myself to choose a favourite song, but I'm sure there's one that stands out to all of the listeners, and we'll come to that in an episode one day. So let's talk a little bit then about Silent Saga. So I'm sure that listeners of this podcast will enjoy the band. So can you tell us a little bit about the history of Silent Saga?
For those who want to get to know Silent Saga, you can find us under our official webpage, that's silentsaga.com, or Facebook at Silent Saga Music. We originally came from Brazil, and we also played aside bands like Nightwish, Epica, Shaman, and others as a support band. You can find some videos in YouTube channel, but under our Brazilian name at the time, and it was Amazon, not Silent Saga. But there you have the gig as a support band before Nightwish, for instance. We try to blend symphonic metal with some traditional elements, and we are currently recording our next EP that will be launched in the end of 2019 in our website.
And of course, if they can't wait for that new EP, you guys have an album out already. It's called Rise. So how was it recording that album? I know you did it alongside Floor's ex-bandmate, Sander. And are there any tracks in particular that you would recommend people to listen to from that album?
Rise, the album that we recorded here in Rock Station in Netherlands, was made or under the supervision, so to say, from Sander Gommens from After Forever, Amanda Somerville, and Ivo von Dyck from Karma Flow. We had a blast recording it, and it's hard to say which song you should listen first, but if you want to keep on the safe side, try listening to Ball of Vanities or Immortal.
I definitely recommend Immortal as well. That was the first one that I heard, and it really grabbed me. So that's all the questions that I have. So I just want to say thank you again, Sabrina, for joining us. And I recommend everyone do check out Sabrina's cover of Sleeping Sun. If you search for Sabrina Tort Sleeping Sun on YouTube or search for Silent Saga, you'll be able to find it that way as well. Thank you so much, Sabrina.
Again, thank you for the invitation. And we hope hear from you in our gig or website or Facebook. And we wish you a Merry Christmas. Bye.
Oh, that was fun, wasn't it? So if you have a band or a song or any other creative outlet that Nightwish inspired you with, let me know by emailing thepodcastandthependulum@gmail.com and we can have a chat sometime soon and we'll pop it in the podcast. I'm looking to you guys now too as we assess the Reddit knockout, and the votes of the Nightwish Redditors gave Sleeping Sun an impressive third place in the Oceanborn knockout. Not quite as high as episode 2's Gethsemane, which won that particular knockout, but clearly there is another song that the fans held in slightly higher regard, but we will have to wait to see which song that is. Perhaps due to its huge success in Germany, I've always taken Sleeping Sun to be one of the most iconic and well-known Nightwish songs from their discography. On Vice's Guide to Getting into Nightwish, they commented, "The crown jewel in the band's ballads is obviously Sleeping Sun, the weepy gold certified in Finland anyway, hit single from 1999. Even with Tarja in full diva mode, the song's winkling keys and gently flowing melodies never descend into schlock. It was never a great fit for Annette's more soulful mid-range register, but in the hands of Floor Jansen, Sleeping Sun has been restored to its former glory, at least in the live arena." Even still, I was surprised to see that the band opted to re-record this track, Sleeping Sun, after their huge success during the Once era. And whilst it certainly was nice to have some incentive for fans that already had all of the songs to buy the Highest Hopes collection best of CD, it did feel a little bit unnecessary for this song to get that revamp. Although a re-record, the session proved quite relaxing for Yuka and Empu, one would imagine, since the original guitars and drums are reused here. And Thomas explains in the Once Upon a Nightwish book all about this re-recording. In August, the band agreed to record a new version of their old hit, Sleeping Sun, to promote the upcoming compilation Highest Hopes, released by Universal and Spinefarm. It all began when Tarja wanted to re-record her vocals on the song, Thomas says. "We thought then, why not re-record the bass too, to get Marco on the credits, since the royalties from the old version went to Sami Vanska. When we began re-recording the song, the old keyboard parts for the choruses were nowhere to be found, so I played the keyboards again. In the end, only the drums and guitars were left as they were. We didn't want to make any dramatic changes, however, we just tried to get a fresh sound. I was actually against the whole thing from the start. I said the song should be left alone. It was quite perfect like it was. But Tarja didn't like her vocals, so we gave her the chance to fix them. I guess the final result turned out quite okay." Empu agrees that the song should not have been messed with. He says, "We didn't re-record the guitars. Actually, I don't think the song should have been remade at all. The Beatles didn't do a remake of Yesterday, did they? There's no beating the original." As we touched on earlier, Sleeping Sun wasn't quite the music that Thomas had wanted to produce, so it's a curious twist of fate that it actually became such a huge part of their story, being re-released, re-recorded, and taking pride of place in the setlist across many tours. Thomas doubles down on his dismay with the second version, and he stated, "I even thought that remaking Sleeping Sun was more or less a mistake at some point. Well, not a mistake, but just not a good idea. Whenever you record a song, an album, you do them with full force, with full heart, and they are an image of the time that they were made, and they should remain like that." In regards to the re-release, I share the reflection that it wasn't needed. I do enjoy Tarja's re-recorded vocals, but the differences don't seem so significant to my untrained ears. So perhaps to Tarja and to operatic scholars and students, the changes are really clear. But for me, I would probably go as far as saying that I preferred her vocals in the original. I enjoy in the original version as well that you can more prominently hear Tarja's accent, while her enunciation is much more refined on the new cut. What this does evidence, however, the whole situation, is that this suspicion that Nightwish is some sort of dictatorship under Thomas is completely false. is something that Floor has vehemently denied in interviews since joining the band. In accepting Tarja's request for a re-record of a song that, though through his opinion, shouldn't have been re-recorded, and let's be honest, probably not at the top of his favourites list, judging from his comments on the track, it goes to show that Nightwish isn't solely about Thomas's opinions and ideas, and he really does take on board the other band members. It's something that fans close to the band, such as myself and probably a lot of you guys listening, we already know that Thomas is a team player. The band wouldn't be going this long if they weren't. But of course, with the dismissal of the vocalist, there's always that concern that he is some kind of dictator with the band. I really don't think that's the case at all. Floor's versions of Sleeping Sun have been formally released in a pair of versions included on the Vehicle of Spirit release, a live version in the Tampere show, and an extra on the DVD of the track being performed at Masters of Rock in the Czech Republic. My favourite thing about Floor's take on Sleeping Sun is how gently she delivers it. I've mentioned in this podcast before that we do rely on Floor for some enthralling notes and that strength in her delivery that we all love, but she's so professional in recognising what a song needs, and her subtle delivery of Sleeping Sun challenges the Tarja cut, in my opinion, for which one I prefer. At times, her soft voice even sounds seductive. In an interview with Musicalypse about the Vehicle of Spirit release, Floor was asked, "What's your favourite moment from the DVD, or do you have a favourite memory from either of the shows?" The two shows, of course, being Tampere and Wembley Arena in London. To which Floor answered, "For me, one of the highlights from the Tampere show was doing Sleeping Sun out on that catwalk that we had into the audience. It was really scary. I had the most challenging shoes. They're awesome. Just like every woman, you just want to wear something that's really great, but it's really not practical, especially when you have to go down a slope and it's slippery. A song such as Sleeping Sun is only beautiful when it's sang perfectly. You can't be off with it. The dynamics, everything needed to be there, and to do that while walking on a catwalk in the midst of 23,000 people was a challenge, but I was very happy with how it turned out." When Floor was quizzed in that same interview on what songs are most challenging to sing, she confessed Sleeping Sun. "It's challenging for the reason mentioned before. It really needs to be exactly correct, not too operatic, not too light, building up the dynamics. That's a real challenge." Which leads us to the Annette version. If you had asked me which song would fit Annette best before hearing her take on the Nightwish classics, Sleeping Sun would be one that I mentioned. As I touched on earlier, it's a great channel for showing off your voice, and Annette certainly has a really strong voice. We know that from other live performances. So regardless, a lot of comments online expressed that Annette's version was weak. So I approached these YouTube videos with caution. But upon listening, I'm actually really pleasantly surprised. Thank you, internet commenters, for putting my expectations so low that they could only ever be surpassed. But in all seriousness, I think Annette gives a great delivery of this track. And yes, her voice is vastly different to the operatic cut with Tarja that we're all familiar with. But her rasp sneaking through sounds really awesome. And her unique take on the middle eight before the final chorus, which is when Tarja shows off her soaring notes in the studio edit, I find Annette's version particularly great. Annette has a very innocent sound to her voice when she delivers this song, and for me, it fits it and it gets the tone perfectly. And her enjoyment must be contagious, as with an interview with hitparade.ch, Annette said, "I really have many songs that I like the most. The song that I like to sing right now is Sleeping Sun." Looking at the music videos then, let's first focus on the initial music video. And that peaceful video featuring Tarja alone in various landscapes It actually belies the literal blood and sweat that went into creating it. So the entire ordeal was detailed at length in the Once Upon a Nightwish book. Sleeping Sun was a proper video at last, Tarja says. We travelled to Lapland and drove jeeps all the way up to freaking Lake Inari. The production crew had scouted for locations and found a small lake in the middle of a forest. I was supposed to dive into Lake Inari. It was autumn, the time of year when the sun still rises and sets up there, but it was already really cold. Shooting in the chilly glory of Lapland was far from glamorous, Tarja said. I was wearing a red dress three sizes too big. It had to be stitched up from the back to make it look like it fit me. They styled my hair in this Finnish tango queen look, which I absolutely hated, but obviously I couldn't say anything. I had the makeup and hairstylist person with me at all times. Pick up a copy of that book to see the full detail, but Tarja also suffered from lying on sharp rocks, and she and the entire crew of the video suffered at the mercy of blood-sucking mosquitoes. It looks so peaceful and enjoyable and beautiful. So clearly Tarja is quite the actress. She can hide her pain and suffering. I really like the initial video. I don't think it's too groundbreaking, but I definitely didn't get the feeling that Tarja was suffering as much as she was. Like the previous video for The Carpenter, Sleeping Sun featured only Tarja rather than the rest of the band. Perhaps a small victory for them in avoiding the bloodshed that the rest of the crew tolerated. It's a video, actually, that Empu called a masterpiece, as is evidenced by this quote again from the band's book. Sleeping Sun was chosen as the metal video of the year by Jyrki, the most popular Finnish teen show on Finnish TV in the 1990s. Regardless, Empu never liked the final result. It's shit, he deadpans. It was expensive to make, but I still think it was shit. I don't know what's wrong with Finnish people. Why do even the most expensive videos look like student projects? How can they waste so much money on them? Okay, so maybe I remembered the masterpiece bit wrong then. The band remember the second video a lot more fondly than that quote from Empu, with Jukka even considering a career change. So in his interview with Reflections of Darkness, when they began questioning about the new epic visual, Jukka starts to laugh before saying, I knew that this was coming. Maybe after this video, we have the chance of a part in Gladiator 2 as actors. We were so good in this movie. There are some new skills coming up. The whole idea of Sleeping Sun video, when we first heard about the idea, we didn't want to do it. We said, no, we are not going to do something like this. We never do a video where we are acting, only videos on which we are playing, because we are no actors. Then the director talked with Tuomas and explained what he wanted to do. Tuomas became convinced that it would be great and told us about it. Little by little, we started. Okay, maybe this is something we can try and see how it goes. Now when I see the result, I'm very happy that we did it. I know that there are many people who are saying that it's so cheesy or something they shouldn't have done. It was great fun and I think it looks really good. It probably isn't worthwhile digging too deeply into the lyrics, as it tells the story of the eclipse quite literally. I do have to highlight the really satisfying 222 days of light, though, which it seems is accurate of the days of the year that has passed before the eclipse. And there's also many references to the usual Nightwish topics, a moment for the poet's play, shores of a solar sea, and of course, perhaps the most obvious link to the band that created this song, Four Wishes I Behold My Night. A little bit of self-referencing there, which I'm always down for. Okay, so I can see that we are almost surpassing the 30-minute mark, so I guess I should look at wrapping this up. But that is a song that there is so much to say on. Like I said earlier, it does seem to be a song that has defined Nightwish in many ways. It's definitely one that gets covered a lot. And yeah, a song that will always have a really big place in their discography. 4 ballads of the eclipse, 3 vocalist renditions, 2 single releases, and a partridge in a pear tree. I don't know. I knew that we chose a good one for our last episode before Christmas, and clearly it's very applicable. The next episode will be out a week today, so as to not clash with your exciting New Year's plans. And to end the year on a high, we're going to be talking about the winner of Century Child's Knockout, and a song that is very, very close to the hearts of fans the world over. Plus, I have another very special guest talking about what that song means to them. So until then, @podcastpendulum is the place to be on Instagram for updates on the episodes, as well as a couple of supporting images for your visual pleasure. And also, I did a Nightwish quiz, which I'm definitely going to do again. It's super fun. I've got loads of people involved. So do go and follow me on @podcastpendulum. I'm not sure when it will be, but I'll make sure you guys can access it, you know, like the highlight section on Instagram. So whenever you come across it, you can have a go at the quiz. The first one is already there in my highlights. You can also email me at thepodcastandthependulum@gmail.com anytime that you want to, if you just want to chat. Preferably about Nightwish, but I ain't picky. Happy Christmas, everyone. I hope you enjoy it. The Podcast and the Pendulum is an independent, fan-run podcast that is not linked in any way with Nightwish, its members, Nuclear Blast, Spinefarm Records, or any associated companies.